This is HPR episode 2895 entitled, The Work of Firefighters, Part 2. It is the 10th anniversary show of Jeroen Patton, and is about 40 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, the continued introduction into the work of firefighters.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi, this is Jeroen Patton again, coming to you live. Well, not really, it's a recording. Anyway, I thought I'd do a follow-up on my earlier piece about firefighting. Now, before I go talk about, stuff, you know, one of the great things that I enjoy about open source and open data is that you can mix and mesh files, data, audio. So, well, being the sort of, person that I am, I thought let's make a little joke, I guess, some jest. You see, HPR 2871. I guess from the top of your mind that doesn't ring a bell, and if it does, you need serious help. But if it doesn't, let me help you. It was the HPR Community News edition for July 2019, and in that Community News podcast, there were some really, really nice remarks about the earlier podcast that I made about firefighting. Really, thanks. It touches me. But there was also something else. And it's, well, you know, I can mix and mash and make I use the contents of the earlier podcast in this one. So, without further ado, let me introduce you to a few of the sound bites that were brought to life during the last HPR Community News, just for fun, you know? Okay, here goes.
I love this show.
Yeah, yeah. Jeroen always come up with good shows.
Yeah, God, that really sucks. He's making it hard for the rest of us. Like,
yeah, yeah. That's I guess that's why I'm not making any more show for HPR.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much.
I'm never gonna be as good as that. So
yeah, I think I'm gonna have to go back to doing knots in my earbud things and hacking ironing boards again to lower the standard a little.
So here I am wondering, guys, really? I mean, come on, you're the guys who introduced me to this wonderful hobby called podcasts. So please continue making podcasts. If not for anything else, make them for me. I mean, being the best podcast in the world can be pretty lonely. So I beg you, make another podcast, both of you, all of you. Don't let me keep hanging here all alone. Anyway, I had to get this off my chest. You know, just for the fun of it, I had to get this off my chest. So, without further ado, let's start with the actual subject. And the actual subject, of course, is another introduction into the work of firefighters. Still, standard disclaimer, I'm just speaking out of my own experiences. It's only related to what I know about firefighting in the Netherlands. So I don't know anything else about other countries. Okay, so first, there was a question in the comments section from one of our regular listeners, Ken Fallon. And his question was, well, those fire hydrants, how do you access them when they're in a parking space and there's a car parked on top of it? Which would be an excellent question if it weren't for the fact that those underground fire hydrants are not located in parking spaces. Most of the times they are located on the sidewalk. And if one is blocked, then you can bet your sweet whatever that 80 meters further up the road or down there's another fire hydrant. And if that one is blocked as well, you just, there's 1500 liters of water in the car itself, which means that for your average kitchen fire or washing machine fire, that's way more than enough. On the other hand, if the house itself is on fire, it takes you about 3-4 minutes till it's empty. Yeah, it's where the number 3 and 4, who are in charge of getting the water supply set up, have a hefty duty. But in all the 10 years that I've done this, I've never seen a fire hydrant blocked by anything. So sidewalks, you know, it's between some sort of public shrubbery and the front lawn of a residential house. And most of the time it's not blocked at all. And if it's a very tiny, teeny-weeny street, then it's probably in the middle of the street and there are no cars parked in the middle of the street. And since you're the firefighting department, you simply block the road and you play boss. That's always nice to do. In fact, in the Netherlands, we have these three disciplines, you know, the firefighters, you have the police, and you have the emergency services. And of these three, at the incident location itself, the firefighters are in charge, so not the police. Police are in charge of taking care of traffic. Unless, of course, there is criminal activity going on, in which case they get precedence, but that usually isn't the case. Okay, back to theory. The theory of things nice to know. Like I said before, we arrive at the scene with a firefighting the car, and the car is basically, it's got a driver. It's got next to the driver is the car leader. There's a nice Dutch word for it, onderbrandmeester, but that's very difficult to translate. And next to that, behind those two people are four other firefighters ready to do to come into action. And then the rest of the car is filled with all kinds of stuff. So you have your water supply with hoses and whatnot. You have your hydraulic equipment for car accidents, and you have your ladder and your rope and a blanket and even a body bag. I mean, it always stays in its own container because, well, there's not that much need for a body bag, thankfully. So it's a car fully equipped, and it's standardized by the Ministry of the Interior. So every firefighting car in the Netherlands of the kind that gets to the scene first, let's put it like that, they all have the same equipment on board. Now this water stuff, that's there are some things to know. One is that we have two pressure systems on board. One is high pressure and one is low pressure. Now let's first start with high pressure. The high pressure is a hose of about 90 meters. It's black, it's about an arm thick, and it's wound up in wound it up, and you can very easily pull it from the car and take it somewhere and spray with water. And with high pressure, it's between 20 and 30 bars, and it will deliver something between 120 and 150 liters per minute. Now, don't get me wrong, it's 10 to 30 or 20 to 30 bars at the built-in pump, so the car has a built-in water pump, but because of the resistance, at the end of this 90 meters, you still have 6 bars left, so it's adequate, but don't get your hopes up. You don't need any more pressure, so that's all fine, and it gives you a really nice length that you can spray in the distance if you bundle the outlet, or you can spray if you like. So that's 110, 150 liters per minute. Then there's the low pressure, and the low pressure is between 3 and 7 bars. So that's not a lot, but that is four times more volume per minute. So 600 liters per minute on average per hose. And so it's high pressure, low volume, water volume, low pressure, high water volume. Now, and if you think back of your physics lecture, it's action is reaction. So if some device pushes 600 liters of water away from you because of pressure, then that same amount of energy pushes back at you. So where high pressure water is very easy to handle, low pressure water is, well, it's not so much it can be exhausting, but there are tricks in how do you handle a hose that way. For instance, the hose comes laying on the floor, on the ground, of course, but if you can bend it into a sort of an S, you can lean into the S so that the reaction pressure and your body weight are in nicely in balance, and then it's pretty relaxed. And by the way, if you have the time to set up low pressure water, then you have a big fire, so you'll be standing there for some time. The hoses themselves, originally the thickness was in inches. It's still the same thickness, but then in millimeters. So, but it's much easier in this case to refer to inches, because it's 2, 3, and 6 inches hoses, whereby 2 and 3 is what's on every firefighting truck, and 6 is on special containers for really, really big incidents. But then you get 150 millimeters of hose, so that's pretty big. So that's water. Now, the other thing that I, in my, whenever there's a demonstration, I get questions about is what, how do you handle trauma? How do you handle, as a firefighting, traumatic incidents? And even that's pretty easy story to tell. It's of course not easy when it happens to you, but it's an easy story to tell. So for instance, let's describe incidents, not in detail, but let's start with a very easy accident and incident, and then we'll work our way upwards, right, in traumatic event. So first, you go to an incident, you do your stuff. There's nothing really important going on. It's not traumatic at all. Everybody goes home. you don't lose any sleep. And nothing bad is happening. Easy peasy. The second one is, okay, so you have a light. Let's say the second level. First level is, well, there's no trauma at all. Second level, well, there's a light trauma. It's a traumatic event. it really takes you a couple of days to get over it. Yeah, and it's in your head, it spins around in your head, but in the end it fades away because you come to grips with it. So you can handle it yourself. So that's the second level. The third level, it's just a little bit higher than this one. It's a traumatic event, and after a couple of days you just can't get to grips with it, and you want to talk to somebody about it. So what you do on average is you go to one of your other firefighting colleagues, and maybe one that you feel comfortable talking to, or maybe someone that was also there, so he can relate to what happened. And you talk about it, and together you find a way to put things to rest, and you get it off your chest and get grips with it. So that's the third level. Now the fourth level, the next higher up level, is some of those firefighting colleagues have been specially trained to do these kinds of conversations, and I've done in the past the training for that myself. So I am one of the colleagues, but I'm also a colleague that people could call day or night if they want to talk with me about things that happened, that they witnessed and that got stuck in their head. Well, what we learned is you need that person to keep talking and reliving the traumatic event over and over and over again, because the emotion is like a bucket in your head, a bucket full of emotions, and you just have to drain the bucket by reliving, talking about the event over and over again. And this can be difficult, because instinctively sometimes you don't want to relive those events because it was way too traumatic. Still, and that's the hard but brutal truth, getting back to that moment, that emotion, what decision did you make, why did you make that decision, did you at that time think that was the best decision to make? Yes, because you didn't know anything, something that became obvious later, for instance. Yeah, but you didn't know it at the time you made the decision. So you have to forgive yourself. For instance, this is an example. You have to forgive yourself for making what in hindsight could be a wrong decision. But at that time that you made the decision, that was based on the information that you know, that you knew, and it was the best decision to make. The last level, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5th level, is the one where somebody's really traumatized, and one of the colleagues, and even a trained colleague, just is not suitable enough, not proficient enough to handle this kind of assistance. And then for that, you can always go to your local post commander and say that you need a professional, and then instantly you get the phone number of somebody who is a trauma specialized psychologist. So their day job is psychology, and then specialized in working with people who are traumatized. I've been to somebody like that myself, and they're amazing. It's completely amazing. And the other thing that we shouldn't forget, and that goes for a lot of stuff, but also for this, is basically shit happens. Whenever you come to the scene as a firefighter, the bad thing has already happened. There's nothing I can do to change that. I can maybe shift the outcome in a positive direction, but the incident has happened anyway already. And one of the things I learned is there's only so much you can do. Even when you come there with 4, 8, 16, 32, I don't know how many people, if it's a small fire, large fire, whatever, there's only so much you can do. If you arrive at, let's say, a wooden house completely ablaze, there is so much energy from the fire produced every second, there's only so much you can do with a hose of water. Even if you put, even if you drown the thing, it's a chain reaction that is, you know, in the end you will stop it, but it's not like, okay, you get there, you flip a switch and the fire is out. It just doesn't work that way. And I don't know how it's in other countries, but here in the Netherlands, it seems like everybody, there's this saying, I believe I learned it somewhere when I was in the States someday. Everybody, opinions are like assholes, everybody's got one. And it seems like whenever you arrive at the scene, people have an opinion, people know what to do. Yeah, there's a house on fire. Pick a hose and start putting out fire. Start pumping water on it. No, because you don't know if there are any people left in the building. So first, before you want to boil them as a shrimp in steam, you have to check that everybody's out before you start putting out the fire. Besides, usually a fire doesn't grow as fast as you sometimes see in the movies. And I've seen the movies too. Yeah? Backdraft, you know. That's maybe something for another episode. Backdraft, flash over, what those are. Yeah, okay, not now, maybe next time. But on average, you know, a house on which has a fire in a room, most of the houses in the Netherlands are not from wood, they're from brick and concrete. Sometimes with wooden bars at the attic, but it doesn't grow exponentially. Thank God for that, of course. Thank God for small favors. Okay, I promised you earlier I would talk about a few stories. So I just, from the top of my head, picked three random stories I'd like to talk to you about. Maybe even do a fourth one. That's a good one. Let me make a note. Okay. First, the first story is about my own first deployment as a firefighter. You know, having been trained, and I had this pager on my belt, doing what I usually do, working. I got my own IT company, I work from home lots of times, and suddenly the pager starts ringing. I see there's an accident nearby on a highway. So I jump in my car, go to the fire station, get on board, I put on my suit, get on board, and I'm the first one in. So I'm front seat, in a way. Then I see somebody else get in as a driver, and he says to the other guys, "You wait, I'll just go ahead anyway." So here I am, together with the other guy, and not with six of us, no, just the two of us, going with siren and flashlights to the incident location. And it was a car that had been rear-ended by a garbage truck, a full garbage truck. So the car in front of it was, it was a French car, French making, but it was a little bit shorter now, shorter than it originally was. So we arrive at the scene. I'm still pretty fresh, so I think, okay, I'll put those cones on the road to mark the place where the rest will arrive and where we'll start doing our job. But the emergency service are already on the location, on the scene. So one of them says, yeah, firefighter, can you assist me? And I look left, I look right, and no. He clearly met me because there was nobody else. Sure. What do you want? Can you hold the head of the victim? Well, victim, is that the word? Anyway, so can you hold his head? Well, you have to, it was the driver, and the airbag had gone off, and nevertheless, your neck gets a beating, and so to ease, and because a head on average is about 7 kilograms, so to ease the driver's comfort, I was asked to hold his head from behind. The car, like I said, was a little shorter. So you have to imagine, I put my elbows on what's that thing called on the back window where you can put your hood on and I don't know, a pillow or something else. You know what I mean? At the back of the car, just behind the couch. Yeah. Okay. So I put my elbows there, and I just put my hands forward, and I could easily hold the head of the driver. Like I said, the car was a little shorter than originally produced. And we were standing there, and he was trying to talk a little bit. Well, he didn't have a lot to say. He was conscious. And not in a real bad shape, thankfully, but nevertheless, the instruction was, stay in your car, we will remove the top of it to make a cabrio out of it, and a cabrio, and we'll get you out of your car safely. So the first responders were on the scene and taking care of him, and I was holding his head, and I've been doing that for 45 minutes. And by that time, I was relieved by a colleague. And that was basically it. I mean, oh yeah, while I was holding his head, at some point, his right arm moved upwards. And he patted on my hand, which was all on his, over his ear, as in sort of a, thanks for doing this, you know? Yeah, that touches something, you know, that was my first incident. I didn't lose any sleep over it, but when we got home from at home as on the fire station and at the fire station, the commander took some time to go around and ask everybody about their experiences, how they had experienced this incident. And so I could say that this was my first, well, clearly everybody knew that, but that it was, I won't say not a biggie, but it's not dramatic, you know? Then 2 months later, there was a very, very, very big fire at an industrial site, and it was a storage shed with a wooden frame and then aluminium plates on top of it. So the fire was in the building, and we weren't allowed to go in. It was way too hot to go in. And we had to wait till the outside, the aluminium would melt before we could put some water into the building itself. And the size of the thing is over 50 meters long by, so 50 meters long by 15, 15 meters wide and 15 meters, 15 meters high. So it was a pretty impressive storage shed. There were no accidents. It was just, it was some, I don't know, some ground grinded material, not valuable, so not a biggie, but it was a large incident. It was what's called a very big fire. So there were lots of people involved. I was in the first car on the scene. I saw the nice blue sparks from the electricity power lines zapping back and forth due to the fire. So we tried to steer away with our hoses, clearly, because water conducts electricity. And like I said in the first broadcast, it really annoys firefighters if they are called, oh yeah, you're a hobby pyromaniac or something else. You know, it's really annoying. But I think that anybody is in some sort of awe when you see a large building, as in a really, really, really huge campfire. We were there for, it started somewhere around 5 in the afternoon, and we were there until a long time into the night, and the fire was contained. Nevertheless, it took us about 2 or 3 days to extinguish all the small fires that kept erupting on random places. It was a large incident, lots of cars involved, lots of hoses, small, big, and bigger. And when we were cleaning up, one of my colleagues said to me, and this, I was 2 or 3 months in, and he said, well, now it's time to quit. So time to quit. I thought to myself, did I do anything wrong? Did I rub somebody the wrong way, or did I make very big mistakes? So I said, why should I quit now? Well, he says, with fires like this, really, it doesn't get any better. And he was right. I mean, a big fire, no personal injuries, it doesn't get any better than that. The other thing, it was also in one of my earlier days, month, my first burning car. In the middle of the night, 2 or 3 o'clock, pager went off. I went to the fire station, went into the car, drove up. There was a car on fire. It sometimes happens, but it was my first car on fire. And so we were, I was sort of, okay, what do I need to do now? What do you expect me to do? And we were taking hoses and walking towards the car. And then there was this sort of exploding sound. And I thought, oh, that's, you know, I've seen enough movies to know that when a car is burning or hits something, it explodes completely. Of course, this is all bullshit. And that's the way the movies are made. But nevertheless, there was an explosion sound. So I was a little startled. And I looked at the site commander. Let's give him that name. He said, that's just one of the tires. No worries. And sure enough, 3 more bangs. And then that was it. So whenever you see a car burning, and you hear an explosion, it's not the gas tank. It's the tires. The last one I like to discuss is a difficult one. we went to the scene where a car had collided with a tree in a corner, so it just slid off the road and collapsed into a tree. And it was a girl, 25 years old, and she was unconscious. Sure enough, the first responders, the first aid was there, the medics. But she was clearly in a bad place, and we did the best we could. She went with the ambulance to a hospital. While they were driving to the hospital, they changed the destination to another hospital, which had more experience with severe brain damage. And well, that's it then. So you go home wondering, okay, is this the best that we could do? And well, sure enough, it is. It's just that, you know, shit happens. And it happened before we came to the scene. And a couple of weeks later, I talked to my neighbor. We have adjoining houses in the Netherlands, a lot of them. I talked to my neighbor and he says, well, weren't you at the scene with that and that accident? You know, the car hit a tree, girl, 25 years old. I said, yeah, I was there. Yeah, I know her. It's, I don't know, relative, rather distant family, not really close, but close enough. And then, well, first of all, you're bound to secrecy. So, everybody has their own story in their mind about how stuff happens, and when they are at ease with that, who am I to present them with another story? What good would it do? And so I said, yeah, we were there, and we, as far as I can tell, we did absolutely the best we could. There was no hiccups. It was a smooth operation as far as her health was concerned, and the speed we got her into an ambulance. And from time to time, I kept tabs on my neighbor, as in, okay, do you know how she is now? And so about half a year later, I learned that, yeah, she was out of the hospital. Yeah, she was out of, what's the word for it? Rehabilitation? Nah, that's not it. Well, you know what I mean. Training to try to restart using your body, and she will suffer the consequences of that incident for the rest of her life. And it's, you know, it's easy to say shit happens. It's not easy when shit happens to you. And I think I've like everybody else, I have my own shit to deal with. So last Saturday we would go on a holiday, but we didn't because one of the children developed pneumonia. And thankfully, we're now 2 days, 3 days later, and the medication has kicked in. So we got a green light from the general physician to restart our vacation. And it's, when I tell you that this is her first, then no, not the first, this is her fifth pneumonia this year. I think you understand that that there's more going on than just being a happy firefighter. Anyways, that was me talking about firefighting again. I would like to thank all those guys who gave me those amazing compliments. That really touches me. If you have comments, if you have questions, just put them in the show comments. I love to read them. And well, I think I just promised you a third episode, so it has to wait, but I will return. Okay, bye bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.